Welcome to our deep dive today. We're going to be looking at scientific publishing. It's something we see all the time, like whether you're reading an article or, just trying to keep up with discoveries or even just looking at like a product review. Have you ever thought about how that research actually gets published? Like what actually goes on behind the scenes?
The whole process.
So today we are going to be talking with Dr. Ulrich Herb. He's the head of the Department of Publication and Research Support at Saarbrücken University Library. And he's seen it all.
Interesting.
He's been a researcher himself, he's been a consultant, and now he works directly with researchers trying to navigate the publication process.
That's great. So we're really getting like an insider's view then.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be really good because we're going to get the kind of insights that you don't normally get in like a typical lecture, like a classroom setting. When we were looking at the sources, one of the things that kept coming up was the motivations behind publishing. And one phrase that we saw over and over again was publish or perish.
You hear that a lot.
And it just seems like researchers are constantly under pressure to publish. And not just, because they love knowledge, but because they need to for career advancement. University rankings, funding.
It's all tied together.
What's often overlooked is the impact that all this has on the institutions themselves. It's not just about individual researchers, trying to get ahead, but it's about how these publication patterns directly influence how resources are allocated to entire departments and even fields of study. So like imagine a scenario where you have a really promising area of research, but it's not generating a lot of publications, maybe because it's a newer field or the research is more complex. And it's taking longer to produce results.
It happens.
Does that mean it gets less funding?
That's the question.
Like, are we missing out on groundbreaking discoveries because of this system?
I mean, that is a real concern. I think the pressure to publish, it can kind of incentivize researchers to focus on areas that will lead to quick publications, even if those areas are not, the most important or impactful in the long run. It's like it creates a feedback loop that reinforces certain research areas at the expense of others.
Now, when we think about ways that research gets published, it's not just journals, is it?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
We tend to think of scientific publishing and we automatically think of these academic journals,
Right.
but it's really much broader than that. You
Wow.
know, you've got books, they still play a crucial role,
Right.
especially in the humanities.
Right.
And then there's also, conference proceedings, technical reports, even preprints,
Preprints.
which are research papers that are shared online before they've even gone through a formal peer review.
So there's like a lot of different
A
avenues.
lot of different ways to get your work out there.
It's fascinating to think about how much this landscape of scientific publishing has changed over time. Like the sources were mentioning that early scientific journals were essentially just letters and meeting notes.
Interesting.
And the speed of publication, it was literally dictated by how fast a stagecoach could travel.
That's wild.
Yeah, a far cry from today's digital world where research can be disseminated globally in an instant.
It's amazing how much things have changed.
And yet, some things remain very similar, like the idea of peer review, which has been around for centuries.
That's a core part of the process.
So, peer review, this mysterious process that determines whether or not research is worthy of being published. It's described as this system of quality control where experts in the field evaluate submissions and decide if they meet the standards for publication.
It's a big responsibility.
It sounds like a pretty intense process.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, the sources are mentioning rejection rates of over 50% in some fields, and it can take months to get a decision.
It's a rigorous process, and it's for good reason. I mean, peer review, it helps to make sure that what's being published is accurate, reliable, and it meets the standards of the scientific community. I mean, it's not a perfect system. Of course, there are ongoing debates about how effective it really is and potential biases, but it still remains a cornerstone of scientific publishing.
Speaking of biases, one of the things that jumped out at me from the sources was this idea that peer review might not always be as objective as we would like to think. There is some evidence that reviewers can be influenced by things like the author's reputation or the prestige of the institution.
It makes sense, you know?
So it's not just about the quality of the research itself, but it's also about who's doing the research and where they're coming from.
It's a complex issue. There's no easy answer. You know, there are different types of peer review.
Right.
Some are more transparent than others.
Okay.
And there are a lot of people working to make the process more objective and fair.
Right.
But I think it's important to be aware of these potential biases.
Yeah.
And to consider them when you're evaluating research.
So even if a study has gone through peer review and has been published in a reputable journal, we still need to approach it with a critical eye.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, peer review, it's an important quality control mechanism, but it's not a guarantee of perfection.
Right.
You still need to evaluate the research itself, you know?
Yeah.
Look at the methods, the data, the conclusions.
Yeah.
Consider the context. Think about the potential biases that might be at play. And that's where this whole discussion of, you know, metrics comes in.
Like, yeah.
How do we measure research impact? Right.
Right.
So we talked about peer review.
Right.
But there's this whole other system of trying to quantify research.
Okay.
Trying to, like, put a number on its influence, like its reach.
Right.
So, you know, you hear about things like these journal rankings and impact factors.
Yeah, those are always coming up.
And it seems like researchers are constantly being judged based on these metrics.
It's true. I mean, we've kind of already touched on some of the limitations of those metrics.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, these traditional metrics, like the journal impact factor, they can be so misleading.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically based on the average number of citations a journal's articles receive.
Right.
But it doesn't tell you anything about the quality of the individual articles.
Right. So you could have a journal that has a high impact factor.
Right.
Because it published one or two really big papers that got cited a ton.
Yeah. Blockbuster papers.
But the rest of the articles are just okay.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you've got the index, which is trying to measure a researcher's, an individual researcher's productivity and citation impact.
Okay.
But again, it's really just a crude measure that can be skewed by all kinds of things.
Like what?
Like how old the researcher is.
Oh. Okay.
Their field of study.
Mm-hmm.
Even the number of co-authors that they have.
So it really is like trying to take something so complex as scientific research and just reduce it to a single number.
Right. And the sources even mentioned that these metrics can be gamed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like researchers can cite each other's work just to boost their numbers.
Wow. Okay. So if we're not supposed to rely on these traditional metrics, how do we get a sense of what research is really making a difference?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Is there a better way to measure impact?
Well, that's where altmetrics come in.
Altmetrics.
Altmetrics. Right. They offer a very different perspective.
Okay.
One that goes beyond just counting citations in journals.
Okay.
So altmetrics are looking at things like how many times a paper is downloaded, shared on social media, mentioned in blog posts, talked about in online news articles.
So it's about capturing that broader impact of the research.
Yes. Exactly.
Not just, you know, how many other academics are reading it, but how it's being discussed in the wider world.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's a way to measure the ripple effect of the research.
I like that. The ripple effect.
You know, how is it influencing conversations and decisions outside of academia?
And that can be really revealing, I imagine, for research that might not get a ton of citations in traditional journals, but is having like a real world impact.
Absolutely. And these platforms like altmetric.com, Intact Story, they're making it so much easier to actually track and analyze these online interactions.
That's cool.
It's kind of like having a dashboard for the social life of a research article.
That's a great way to put it.
You can see where it's being talked about, who's talking about it, what kind of impact it's having.
So altmetrics are giving us a more nuanced view of how research is being used and shared in the digital age.
Exactly. Exactly. They're a really valuable complement to traditional metrics.
Okay.
Because they're providing a more holistic view of research impact.
So we've got this, you know, this whole complex landscape of traditional metrics and now new metrics like altmetrics.
Right.
It sounds like we need to be really savvy about how to consume this information.
Absolutely.
To really understand what's going on.
You got
to
be informed.
But how does all this affect the researchers themselves?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, are they constantly, you know, checking their H index, worrying about where their articles are being cited?
Well, there's definitely a lot of pressure to publish and to have high metrics.
Right.
And that creates a lot of stress for researchers,
Yeah.
especially for those who are early in their careers.
Right.
And it can lead to, you know, a focus on quantity over quality.
Right.
Researchers might feel like they need to publish as much as possible,
Yeah.
even if it means that their work isn't as deep and rigorous as it could be.
So it sounds like they have to walk this tightrope of they need to be aware of these metrics, how they're being evaluated, but they also need to stay true to the research and not let the pursuit of numbers drive their work.
That's where resources like the ones from Dr. Erb's department can be so valuable.
Okay.
You know, they can help researchers understand this complex landscape, help them navigate these systems, the
Yeah.
metrics,
Yeah.
and help them make informed decisions about where to publish their work.
It sounds like a real challenge to find that sweet spot.
It is.
We're only scratching the surface here.
Right.
But we're starting to get a sense of how the world of scientific publishing works,
Yeah.
the factors that influence what gets published, how
Right.
it's perceived.
Exactly. And in the final part of our deep dive,
Okay.
we're going to take all this information
Yeah.
and turn it into actionable advice for you, the listener.
Okay.
So we're going to give you the tools you need to be a critical
Okay.
and informed consumer of scientific research so that you can navigate this world with confidence.
I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
Okay, so welcome back to the deep dive. We've covered a lot of ground,
We have.
the motivations behind publishing,
Right.
the complexities of peer review, this
Yeah.
whole evolving world of
Like
metric.
metrics. Yeah.
But now let's bring it all home.
Okay.
What does this mean for you, the listener?
Yeah.
Like, how do you navigate this sea of information?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? And it's really what this whole deep dive has been about. You know, we want to empower you to be a really critical, informed consumer of research. Because let's face it, we're bombarded with information from all sides these days.
It's true.
And it can be hard to know what to trust.
Yeah, especially when it comes to science,
Right.
which can be so complex and nuanced.
Exactly.
And we can't all be experts in every field,
Right.
but we do need to be able to evaluate the research that we're seeing,
Yeah.
whether it's for our work, personal decisions, or just staying informed about the world.
Absolutely. And that's where all the stuff we've been talking about,
Right.
the tools, the insights, you know, they give us a framework
Yeah.
for thinking critically about this research,
Yeah.
looking beyond the headlines and the hype to really understand what are the strengths,
Right.
limitations of the information.
So it's not about just blindly accepting what we read.
No.
Even if it's published in like a prestigious journal
Right.
or it's by a well-known expert.
Exactly. Critical thinking is key. And it starts with really thinking about the source.
Yeah.
You know, where is this research published?
Right.
Is it a reputable journal,
Okay.
a respected institution? Are the authors experts in their field?
Right. It's like, you know, if you were getting medical advice,
Exactly.
you'd want to make sure that the person giving it to you is qualified.
Exactly. You want to see those credentials.
Right. But we've talked about how even reputable sources can publish flawed research.
Right. That can
So
happen.
we can't just stop there.
You got to keep digging. So the next step is to look at the methodology.
Go.
How was this research conducted?
Right.
Was the sample size large enough?
Okay.
Were the methods appropriate
Right.
for the research question?
These are all good questions.
These are key things to consider.
And it sounds like, you know, you might have to dig into the study a little bit.
Yeah, you might have to get your hands a little dirty.
And not everyone is comfortable with scientific jargon or like statistical
Oh, no.
analysis, but I think the key here is just to look for that transparency.
Transparency.
Like, can you understand how the researchers came to their conclusions? Do they explain their methods clearly?
Yeah, it's all about clarity.
Okay, transparency is important.
Definitely.
And then there's potential biases.
Ah, biases.
Like, did the researchers have any conflicts of interest
Right.
that might have swayed their findings?
Right. Was there any funding from a company that might have a vested interest?
Right. Like those conflicts of interest. We hear about that all the time,
RM, yeah.
where studies are funded by
Right.
industries that have a stake in the results.
Absolutely. And it can be so hard to untangle those financial ties from the findings.
Right. So it sounds like we have to be detectives a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Looking for clues, considering different angles. It's a lot to think about.
It is, but that's the point. We
Right.
can't just be passive about this.
Right. We can't just absorb. We have to engage.
Engage, question, and, you know, think about those limitations.
Okay. And I think it's easy to forget that, you know, a single study
Right.
is rarely the definitive answer.
Exactly.
Like science is a process of building knowledge.
Over time,
So
yeah.
you have to look for evidence
Right.
from multiple sources.
Emerging evidence, yeah.
Right. Do other studies support what this one is saying, or do they contradict it?
Right. Are people
Is the
disagreeing?
consensus forming?
Yeah. What's the scientific community saying?
That's a good point. I mean, science is constantly evolving.
It is.
So what might seem like a groundbreaking discovery today
Right.
could be overturned or
Ugh.
refined by future research.
That happens all the time. It's
Yeah.
part of the process.
And I think this is really important. Be wary of those sensationalized headlines.
Oh, yeah, the clickbait.
Right. And those like overblown claims.
It
Science is nuanced, it's complex.
is.
It's rarely about these like black and white answers.
Right. There's a lot of gray area.
So look for research that presents its findings in a balanced way,
Right.
you know, that acknowledges limitations,
Yes.
uncertainties.
It's about being honest about the research.
So don't just go with the clickbait.
Right.
Dig deeper, look for context, think about the source.
Absolutely.
It's like we need to be bringing our critical thinking skills
Yes.
to everything we read.
To everything, yeah.
And that's a wrap on our deep dive.
That's it.
I hope you found it insightful, maybe a little bit empowering.
I hope so too.
Because now you have the knowledge to not just read research, but to understand it,
Right.
evaluate it,
Yeah.
draw your own conclusion.
It's exactly. Be informed.
Curiosity is your compass.
There you go.
Critical thinking is your guide.
Love it.
So keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.
That's the best advice I can give.